Okay, so good morning. Why don't we go ahead and get started? We'd like to begin, as we often do, with an opportunity for you to ask any questions or maybe say anything about how your practice with wise speech has been going. We've offered a few suggestions along the way of things to try out. Did you do that? And what have you seen? So please feel very welcome. Charles.
In general, I feel I do a pretty good job with mindful speech, but I blew it last night. I was at an interfaith gathering, and at one point, a person said to me, "Well, everybody believes the same thing." And I said, "No, they don't." And after the words were out of my mouth, I thought, "Oh, that was terribly unskillful."
How did it land? Did you notice any of the
Well,
results of
she kind
that?
of stiffened a bit and didn't say much for a while. So I think I kind of shut her down, which really was not what I would prefer to have done. I just, and you know, the first thing she said after that, before she kind of shut down, was, "Well, everybody believes in God." And I said, "Not everybody here does believe in God. I don't." But so I thought, you know, if I were to do that again, maybe saying something like, "Well, I think there are different beliefs here," and let it go at that, something that would be more mild and not, because there was a kind of a critical tone, I think, in my voice, because I was.
It certainly counteracts what she had said. Your statement was true, but perhaps at that moment, not as timely, or maybe it wasn't adding to the, I don't know what the context of the conversation was. So it might have been possible to convey that same idea, because after all, the statement that everyone believes the same thing is a little bit of a shutting down statement also. So, but coming from a place where what you were intending to do was open things or broaden things or soften a statement like that, there may have been a way to bring in that kind of tone to what you were saying, such that it could have been conveyed differently. But on the other hand, we don't know as we're launching our words out. So we come back to, where was it coming from? And then, of course, also, how did it land? And can there be, some change in the flow from there? But staying connected to your own heart often serves. I don't know if one of my other teachers has a comment, but thank you for sharing that, because I would guess every single one of us is there.
You know, I appreciate your sharing too, Charles, and because this is a practice, you know, community and an opportunity, I would reflect too on the way you presented this. You said, "I blew it," you know. And I think one of the challenges of practice is to take everything that comes up as an opportunity for you know, an opportunity to cultivate our wisdom. And we're very judgmental about our unskillful speech, and we tend to focus a lot of energy on, you know, when I blew it, right? And we all blow it, or we, I think many of us have that kind of response arises. But I think part of what we learn from engaging with the texts, as we're doing in this class, is just that in the text, skillful speech and unskillful speech, they each of them provide a way to see into our practice, a window on our practice. And the more that we can sort of encounter unskillful speech as it arises in us, you know, as it's what meets the world of interaction with other people, without a lot of judgment around it and just going, oh, here's this, you know, this response arising. It comes from a place of maybe there's a sense of defensiveness or a sense of selfing that's happening, or a sense of, I don't know what, you know, can be a whole bunch of different things, but, you know, settling into it as a practice opportunity, which you're doing is the point of the speech. It's not always to get it right or never blow it, but to be attentive to what's happening when we interact with the world through speech. I hope that adds something.
Can I throw in my two cents here? Having myself been in similar situations. So I'm just offering this in the spirit of brainstorming, not in the spirit of this is what should be done. But so again, maybe it's helpful to say something like when she says, well, we all believe the same thing, to say something like, yeah, it's very, a lot of people have this idea that everybody believes the same. And I'm not sure, or I don't know, maybe to even just stop there. So to kind of acknowledge what she's saying, but not necessarily agreeing. And to say also, it's easy to believe that. Yeah, it makes sense that a lot of people think that we all believe the same or something like this. I don't know, but maybe my responses aren't even the best responses, but just instead of countering what she said, to support what she said, but in such a way that is not necessarily agreeing with exactly what she said. So that's my, maybe it's not a great attempt, but an attempt to provide an alternative way forward. I hear you is what Julie wrote. Yeah, to say something like that.
Or if in fact there's some sense of being, some sense of defensiveness that comes up, I love the response, ouch. You know, if there's an ouch that happens, to kind of go to what I know about what's happening here. Oh, like somebody, Kim, suggested, maybe there is a sense of being shut down, like, oh, that excludes me. And sometimes just something like, ouch, whether it's to myself or spoken out loud and I have a choice there, you know, that can be just useful to acknowledge, oh, there's something going on here that where that is, you know, where there's some pushing against that or some sense of, you know, just that's very honest as well as true sometimes.
See, Diane says she has a question. If it could be relatively short, that would be good. And then we'll have to move on. But there will be more questions later.
Okay. And I can wait till later if you prefer. That'd be fine. Anyway, I guess back to what Charles said, I had the opposite experience. My neighbor was like bragging on how his son had wished he had been at the Capitol on the insurrection. And I was just so appalled that all I could do is turn and walk away. And one of the reasons I'm taking this class is I'm not sure if that was the right action. So, and if you want to address that later, then I'm totally fine with that. But
well, it's, you know, this is coming back maybe to the overarching idea that we had from the Sutta MN61, where we consider before and during and after actions, whether of body, speech, or mind, if there may be harm to ourselves or to others. And, you know, in your case, it may have called for a check-in at that moment. You know, the turning away was a response, I believe, to pain that you felt internally. But as David said, the ouch, and he pointed out he has a choice about saying that or not. And it feels to me like you maybe didn't have a choice in that moment. And so just being gentle and being aware that mindfulness is a support for helping us to decide if turning away was the right thing or not, but to not worry so much about the details of that moment, but to cultivate strength of mindfulness through daily life practice, through sitting on the cushion, and then trust that as mindfulness gets stronger, there will be more and more of those occasions where we can ask that question before we act or speak. Does that help a little bit in the moment, at least? Yeah.
Yes,
okay, so Ying.
Well, I really enjoying this exploration with this few questions. It leads naturally to what I'm about to share. What I'm about to share is kind of a set of teachings that maybe kind of four of us attributed as a lesser known wise speech teachings from the sutta. And they're lesser known maybe because they're not like this particular sutta that I will be sharing from is Anguttara Nikaya 3.67. Diana had shared a piece of this a teaching from the sutta that is a wise listening on the first class. And I'll share a few different aspects of the teachings from this particular sutta. They don't completely map in a particular kind of a scheme in my own mind. So I'm going to just try a little bit of a hand gesture to illustrate what these teachings are pointing towards in terms of wise, skillful communication and speech. And they all had to do with cultivating a sense of a discernment of when and how a discussion or a communication is a wholesome, skillful situation and when it's not. And this cultivation of a discernment is quite important. I think both Charles' question and Diane's question are pointing to this particular aspect. Can we cultivate growing sensitivity and wisdom for us to have a clarity in what the situation is, and from there we respond to what need to flow out of that. And so the first teaching and that comes from this particular sutta is about discerning the situation in terms of whether the people engaging the conversation in a fully engaged way. And so, you know, I'm going to use this, my two hands, like two sides of the communication, you know, a person who asks the question, a person who answers the question, or a person who brings up the topic, the other person engaged within this. Now, there is this way of communicating. They're not meeting each other. And then there is this way. They're really meeting each other. Kind of Anjali, the two hands coming together, they're unifying, they're connecting, they're kind of exploring the topic together in some way. Or the person is asking the question in a very specific way, the other person would answer it in a very specific way. And so they're not kind of missing each other. If someone asks the question, they dodge the question, or they kind of pick up a different topic to talk about. So they're not really meeting each other. And this is the situation we all know. If this is the way of communicating, this is probably not a very wholesome situation right now to do this. And the sutta used the words like, if a question needs to be answered in a specific way, whether it's being answered in a definitive way or being offered with a lot of detailed analysis or being counter-asked, you know, kind of for clarification, understanding. You know, if you said, you know, everyone believes the God. Oh, I'm very curious, you know, what makes you, you know, talk about this and say it this way. And so there is that engagement there. But we all know there are situations that come along when we know that maybe we didn't wanted to engage because either we're distracted, preoccupied with other things in our mind, or we feel embarrassed, or we kind of just didn't want to engage in some way, and there are certain things, and I want to hide my secret ingredients of my recipe, so I'm the only one who's getting all the praises of the Thanksgiving dinner party. And so there is this kind of things that can go on inside of ourselves. So there's a first teaching is asking us to check in. You know, what's going on inside of us? Are we engaging in a way that is really meeting with each other? And in Chinese, so there is phrase that refers to this kind of a teaching. It's like a matching horse mouth on the cow's head. You know what? They don't match. They don't look like anything. And so we often say, oh, you know, 牛头不对马嘴. It's like, you know, the cow's head doesn't match with the mouth of the horse. And so explore, kind of discern if this is the situation, the dynamics that's happening. And the second teaching that's offered in this sutta has to do with, I'm going to use this form of a hand gesture. It's like how we hold the container of our conversation. And so, for example, if we are getting together in breakout room, and there is the kind of assumption that's made that when we're getting into the group, we offer respect to each other, and there is some assumptions made, keeping confidentiality, and there are particular order that we speak. So it's not like I want to talk and then I'm just going to jump in. And so this way of holding the space of how we're speaking is a way for us to discern if the situation that we're engaged in is a wholesome and skillful one or not. You know, and so the sutta used a keyword like, depending on different translations, like a standing firm or standing by the positions, being consistent about one's positions, standing firm by agreed upon assumptions and a kind of group agreement, or stand firm to what one knows is true, and stand firm by the processes or procedures and that the group agrees upon. And so there's a sense of a stand firm for me as a sense of integrity, dignity, and have some clarity in this, in engaging a conversation. And I want to differentiate this from kind of a dogmatic holding. And so the dogmatic holding of one's position would be kind of like, you know, I'm right and you're wrong, and I'm not going to change my position. And so there is that sense of maybe rigidity, not flexible. And the conversation may feel like it's stuck. You know, kind of like not going and not moving, not flowing in some way. And so this is the kind of a holding that would not be useful when we're engaging in a conversation. If you find someone really strong holding, you know, a particular point and not willing to engage in any other way, then we can kind of say, oh, let's see if this is a situation that actually going to be beneficial or not. Maybe if it's not, you know, we have a choice to maybe find other options, either disengage or find some other topics that we can find some form of a unity in engaging in conversation. And then the last two teachings that the sutta talked about is how to discern the situation is beneficial, supportive one or not. is by observing if there is this kind of a movement going on. So, for example, if someone is asking the question and the person would get very defensive, we talked about this, right? Either they show anger, aversion, intimidation, and they have bitterness with this. And the sutta used quite strong language for a set of this. It's like someone asked a question, the person who answers the question would puts down the questioner, crushes the person, ridicules the person, and grasps at their little mistakes. And so this is kind of like, real aggressive thing that's going on. And it's not, this is, we can see this is not really kind of meeting each other for sure. And so I began to tune in for that kind of dynamic, whether it's within us or in the space where the communication is happening. And when we can begin to feel and sense this is going on, it gives us some clue in terms of the overall dynamic of the communication. So these are, this and meeting with each other, or whether we're holding the space in some way, or whether we're kind of, really bumping our heads against each other. And so these are some ways to discern, help us to discern the situation, and then offering then in that, from that discernment, we can offer space for us to have skillful choices in those situations. So I want to end this piece by reading on the verses at the end of this sutta that speaks about summarizing this teaching. And so the verses goes something like this. Those who converse with hostility, too sure of themselves, arrogant, ignoble, attacking virtuous, they look for flaws in each other. They rejoice together when their opponent speaks poorly and makes a mistake, becoming confused and defeated. But the noble ones don't discuss like this. If an astute person wants to hold a discussion connected with the teachings and its meaning, the kind of discussion that the noble ones hold, then that wise one should start the discussion knowing when the time is right, neither hostile nor arrogant, not overexcited, contemptuous, or aggressive, or with a mind full of jealousy. They'd speak from what they rightly know, they agree with what was well spoken, without criticizing what was poorly said. They not persist in finding faults, nor seize on trivial mistakes, neither intimidating nor crushing the other, nor would they speak with slam implications. Good people consult for the sake of knowledge and clarity. That's how the noble ones consult. This is a noble consultation. Knowing this, an intelligent person would consult without arrogance. So, thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Ying. Wow, speech, this is not easy. It is not easy. I think this is a lifetime practice. I sometimes am still like, oh, ouch, whoops, I didn't do that so well. So I'll just share, for me, this is still an ongoing practice. I can get the truth part down and the timing part down, but maybe it's not coming from a place of openness. Maybe I feel a little bit defensive. Sometimes people are, say things and I feel like, oh, stand up for what I believe in or something like, I don't know. So I appreciate very much. There's lots of things in the suttas, in addition to these lists that we've been talking about. And just as Ying was sharing, there's kind of these ways to hold discussions. But I think that this is a lifetime of practice. And what better way than to actually practice to do this, right? So this happens in real life, but we're going to put you into a breakout group. And we're not going to give a lot of instructions, make it maybe a little bit less contrived than some breakout rooms. But we want to provide a discussion topic in which there might be some differing opinions. Before I even tell you what the topic is, I'll tell you that amongst the four of us, we have differing opinions. So we don't want to say, like, figure out the right answer. That's exactly where we're not going. We're just saying something about, okay, here's a topic where there's more than one way to show up or to have a point of view or something. And of course, we don't know what your opinions are. So you might end up with a group where you all think the same or everybody has a different idea or something like this. But here's what we want to point to, that we titled this class Open Mind, Open Heart, Open Mouth. And I'll just say for me, this has been the most helpful in my own practice with speech is, can I, as best as I can, and I can't always do this, have an open-heartedness? So, and I found that kind of with this open-heartedness, then verbal daggers, which maybe the other person doesn't think is a verbal dagger, but I'm experiencing, everybody believes in God. And I'm kind of like, ow, you know, like, wait, if there's a sense of openness, then maybe this dagger just goes on through, right? There's space there. It doesn't get stuck, doesn't hit anything. It's one way to think about it. So again, before I tell you exactly the topic, open heart, open mind, and just notice, are you somebody that's like, just steps back, like, no, thank you, I'm not going to introduce that. Or like, oh yeah, I have to get in there and, you know, let people know my point of view of this, and I know a lot about this, or I feel something. So this is just an opportunity to just observe ourselves, how we are when we're in conversations. I'll say this again, there's no right answer, and this is a lifetime of practice. This is not something that we're just going to, you know, like, okay, got that thing down. Now I understand. So, and maybe also, is there a way that we can learn from each other? And as Ying was pointing to, are there ways maybe we might miss one another? And maybe, this is Diana's little point, sometimes I purposely will miss somebody if I feel like they want to take us down a direction that doesn't feel healthy or wholesome or place I want to go, then I'll kind of like redirect. And there's a, maybe introduce a non sequitur or something like this. So pause, listen, open heart, open mind, as best you can, as best you can. Okay, here's the topic. Thanksgiving's coming up. Tofurkey or turkey? Should it be vegetarian or meat? Right? The Buddhists have a range of views on this. I'll just say, I don't know if it's helpful, the earliest suttas are not clear. Different translators, there's some words in there that nobody really knows how to translate about what the Buddha's last meal was. And so you can find find support for any of these views in the earliest suttas. I'll just set that there. So we'll just do this in popcorn style. Just we'll kind of put you in this group and just talk about vegetarianism, meeting, eat tofurkey or turkey. And maybe the last thing that I'll say before we send you into this group to have this conversation is take time to touch in with yourself. I sometimes feel my feet on the ground as a great way to kind of like stop the momentum of conversations, or if I find myself being defensive. Take a breath, pause, breathe, check in, and maybe have a little fun. Maybe have a little fun here too. So occasionally I'll put in the broadcast thing, like just to remind that pause, breathe, you know, this kind of stuff, just as helpful. You won't have that at Thanksgiving, but maybe you will. I don't know. But okay, so if we're ready, we'll go ahead and go into the breakout rooms. Thank you.
Well, there they all come. Welcome back. Welcome back. So we're changing our usual order of things, and we're going to do a short guided meditation now. So please settle in and just find a comfortable spot. Somewhere where you can sit still, it'll just be 10 minutes or so. Maybe taking a long, slow, deep breath in, and then on the exhale, softening the body, letting the shoulders drop, softening the eyes and the eye sockets. Softening the jaw. Feeling down into the belly area. Is there any tightness that you could just invite softening? And then perhaps broadening the attention to the whole body. And just sensing the overall picture of the energy in the body. Maybe there are feelings of heat or coolness. Sense of motion. Maybe just some energy flowing, or maybe there's like ping pong balls bouncing around the system. Just imagining that by being softly present with the body, that energy could just slowly settle a bit. And bringing attention specifically into the area of the head, behind the eyes, in the head, just sensing if there's any tension or motion. Andrea Fella says, let your brain relax. Maybe feeling down now into the contact with the seat and the legs or the feet against the floor, sensing the groundedness, those spots. And inviting anything in the any energy to move down. Just settle out. So sensing now the presence of the mindfulness. It was already there to examine the energy, but now really sensing, there's mindfulness in the mind. This is the feeling of sati. Noticing if there are any emotions present in your mind at this time. And what's the overall flavor of the heart mind, the citta? There might be something very noticeable, or there might not really be anything so prominent, and that's fine. And then an invitation to broaden the awareness even farther from the sense of the body or any emotions. Maybe if your awareness could be as large as the room that you're sitting in, does that make sense that the mind could broaden? Like the way when we're zeroed in on detail, like someone's eyes, then we can broaden out and see their whole face also. So we have our body and our immediate emotions and thoughts, and then we just broaden out. Just holding this moment. And in this broad space, it's fine now to bring in a gentle reflection of your experience in the breakout room. How was that? From the present moment, just bringing in that memory, some impressions from that time. Thinking about Ying's hand gestures, was there the gentle meeting, like the palms in Anjali? Was there a holding of the topic, like the way her hands were cupped together, raising up? Was there a sense of missing or a sense of tightening? What was the flavor of that, the flow of that breakout room session for you? It's all fine. We're just holding that awareness. So this is a way to be mindful of how a discussion was, bringing in these different elements and letting them be held. And softening in light of all of that. Communication has so many different elements. Maybe we sense that the way to manage them all is simply to hold with the open heart, open mind, connection to the body. And if it feels relevant for you, this is entirely optional, you may wish to set an intention around speech. You could make it specific, like in an upcoming conversation or at Thanksgiving, or just in general, an area that feels rich and juicy for you. Or you may just wish to keep resting for another moment.
Thank you, Kim. Okay, wow. So now we'd like to hear from you. How was the breakout group? How was the guided meditation? Do you have some questions about Ying's teachings? And we'll send you a copy of the sutta that Ying was referring to. But anything you'd like to share? Any learnings? Any aha moments? Any new ideas? Yes, David Weisskopf.
Okay, so I'm have
already this a little bit nervous. Okay, so I feel like, okay, you have your, here we go.
I'm nervous about what I want to say anyway. But I felt like my group came together like this in a way that excluded certain views. So I left the group feeling very aroused. And when, you know, Kim's inviting me to release tension, you know, and stuff, I was like, just, yeah, I wasn't really trying to release tension. I was just sitting there with it all, you know, with all the burning. And then beneath that, I guess I felt a lot of grief. And dukkha, hurt, you know, pain. And I feel like, well, just, can I take a minute just to tell you a brief story about an experience at IMC without naming names?
Do you think it would be helpful at this moment, or is it just, or will it like move, make a point that you haven't made already, or?
I guess I'll just summarize it, what I think happens. I think sometimes we unwittingly find ourselves moving into a position. And what, maybe we build a sense of community around it. Maybe it expresses a need to belong, a little bit of dependency, even a need to please, but it excludes other factors.
Yeah.
And really others. And so, yeah, that's all I'll say to make it brief.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, David. This is what humans do, right? They come together, and just as you said, they want to belong. But it might also, and I'm offering this, I don't want to defend all of IMC or certainly all human communities, but it might also be that with a sense of belonging that some people feel, or a sense of cohesion, it allows some safety And that presence of safety then allows people to have some ability to maybe open up with some differing views. So we might be creating the conditions in which later there can be something different happens. So I appreciate this very much myself, having experienced that, being in groups like, okay, I'm not sure that went the best it could have, but I didn't really recognize that until later I have a new idea. Later, like, oh, I see how that impacted me. Now I learned something important. So just this recognition that, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, David. I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know, that what happens in a conversation doesn't only stay in that conversation, right? It has all these ripple effects. And sometimes the ripple effects can be positive, even though we don't see them. So I'm just maybe being a little bit of a Pollyanna here, saying that there can be some benefits of this. And I don't know, do some would like my co-teachers like to contribute to you?
Maybe I'll share one experience that I have that kind of was a teaching moment for me. Was early on when I was in a Pure Land Buddhism Sangha. I went there, I could not quite gel with the teachings in terms of somehow you have to just keep bowing, chanting to somehow go to, a pure land. You'll be all okay. And I can't gel with that ideology or the way of the teaching. But what I found, though, was there was such a warmth in the community and kindness in the community that are expressed in many different ways that I found really resonating and supportive of me. And so I realized that there's a lot of value here in the Sasanga, even though there are specific teachings that I may not agree to and even feel maybe contrary to what my understandings are. And in our community, there can be this way where there are certain beliefs or certain views that we may not connect. But are there other ways that we human beings are connecting that allow us to begin to understand each other and support each other and hold each other in a way that's meaningful for all of the people involved? And so I'm saying this in the way that kind of maybe inviting us to also, even in the midst of disagreement, are there ways that we do connect? You know, maybe having good meals together, maybe having a walk together. And so there are other ways that we may be able to connect.
Thank you, Ying. Was there something more you'd like to say, David?
Yeah. So, I mean, I hate to say this, but I feel like we overvalue this need to connect. You know, I mean, this need to connect and maintain this congeniality is also leading to avoiding the fact that we can't maintain our styles of life and have this planet survive. But nobody wants to sit there and say, oh, there's this huge disconnect as we get together and, celebrate our friendship and our lives. and our meals together and our vacations together and our this together and our that together. There's a huge disconnect with that, and our principles are non-harming. And even our having a future, and our kids having a future, and our grandkids having a future. But, oh, I care so much about my kids and my grandkids and others. There's this huge disconnect, and it's not being addressed. What's being addressed is this need for connection, for mutual respect, for communion. And so I find that it just takes me right back. I find myself aroused. I find myself grieving. I find myself hurt. And there you go.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that's, yeah. And I'm sure, David, you can also recognize that what you're saying, of course, right? The way that, you know, we use the planet's resources and in the spirit of let's connect. But there's also some people who feel, for whatever reason, feel so completely isolated that they can't even like think about the planet because they're in pain or something, right? So yeah, David, you're pointing to something really, like, there is no easy answer here, right? In terms of how can people feel like they have enough so that they're not exploiting resources? And one way to feel that is to connect, but you're pointing out that's not the only way, and maybe just the way that we're doing that is going the direction we don't want to go. Yeah, yeah. I wish I knew the answers to these things. Thank you, David.
And I'm going to suggest that we hold the two questions that have come up for a final Q&A session at the end, Heidi, Jerry, and that we dip back into sort of an overview of the teachings. I think this is a place we don't typically do this in the classes, where a little bit of a synthesis at the end may be useful in holding, you know, a diverse and dispersed set of teachings. But this follows so well, I think, on David's question and points, just that these aren't teachings that provide us simple answers to various human dilemma that we experience and that we share. I think if there's any big takeaway, one big takeaway from this investigation or exploration of wise speech, it's that all of our practice is available in our speech practice. All of it. The dukkha, the freedom that's available, the community in which we practice, the communities in which we live, all of it's here in the speech. The teachings about speech and engaging with unskillful and skillful speech that come to us in the discourses suggest, as we've, I think, tried to show, a very highly nuanced, very subtle approach to bringing our practice into this realm of speaking, of interaction, of communication and community. And instead of commandments of various kinds, what comes up again and again is the importance of consistent, consistent, devoted, pervasive, mindful attention to our body and mind and heart in the world. Right? So just to sort of point to some of the things we've talked about in the last 3 days and earlier today, and sort of bringing them together a little bit, we began with this idea of the conditions of skillful speech, the conditions from which skillful speech arises, because we have some, we can influence the conditions, right? We can observe the sorts of conditions that seem to be associated in our lives with unskillful speaking, skillful speaking. We can do this as we do with mindful attention, anything, without a lot of judging, a lot of preference. It helps us see clearly when we leave that to one side. And then we attend to those conditions. Among those conditions, although we didn't really look at it as a condition, is listening. You know, the extent to which we become skillful listeners can be a condition for more skillful interaction with others through speech. And we said about listening that engaging our own unskillful and skillful speech frequently encourages us or leads us to listening more and listening better. We also, when we talked about listening, we sort of talked about being mindful of the voices that we use in our own internal monologues and dialogues and maybe, hey, committee meetings, right, that happen in the mind, that we notice the what's in those kinds of expressions, even in very fundamental things, the voice with which we redirect our attention back to the breathing, back to the here and now of our experience when we've been momentarily distracted or caught up again in thought, in emotional attendance, in the sensations of the body. The way we come back to the breath, unhurried, without judgment, without hitting ourselves over the head, that voice, right, that speech is important in our practice. We drew this distinction between mode and content, right? It was pointed out, I think, by Diana, but certainly earlier in the class, that we rarely find ourselves able to convince other people of our view by talking at them or talking past them or talking through them. I could put the hand gestures together, right, that Ying used, you know. Those things aren't very useful in convincing people. But we do have a great deal of influence over both what we choose to talk about, the content of our speech, and how we speak about it, the mode of our speech. And I think we suggested that the mode is frequently more important than the content. Choosing what we talk about with a recognition that certain topics lead us and snag us into unskillful practice, and others seem to be more onward leading, more supportive of practice. Absolutely, the content's important, but the mode, the heart we bring to it, the open heart, the open mind that we've kept sort of almost as a mantra bringing into our teaching here, these things seem to be, this mode of speech seems to be really significant in what we can cultivate in our speech. In addition to mode and content, we talked in the last class about context. Thanksgiving is a context of speech, right? It opens up the possibility for different content, different modes of speech. It provides a wonderful opportunity for practice, but it's just a context, and it may be useful to think of it as that. And maybe we see the context as, about different political views, but maybe it's about connecting with people. Warts and all, right? Family's family. People are people. We don't get perfect. At least this practice doesn't suggest that perfect is what we're, you know, should keep looking for, some transcendent perfection in our nearest and dearest. And perhaps if we were different teachers, Ying, Diana, Kim, and I would have called the class Mode, Content, and Context. You know, that sounds pretty good. Book title, you know. But we wanted to focus on speech as sort of, as we talked about it, this fascinating place, or like I'm going to say place, this fascinating coming together maybe of heart, mind, and body, right? The heart and mind expressed through the body. Heart and mind in human relationships, heart and mind in the world. Because this is where we practice. It's here that we practice. When we pay really careful attention, and it came up in questions today, David, for example, talking about the grief he feels. That's the heart and mind of the practice. And that's a good location, I think, for generating skillful speech, skillful conduct, instead of a kind of overlay like mode, context, content, which is a little maybe more analytical. So in kind of bringing all this together, the last thing I'd say was that I think we identify, when we look at the texts as we've done in our study and practice mode, bringing together this kind of engagement with the text and engagement with our practice, a mutually supportive, mutually revelatory relationship between wise speech and seeing clearly, wise speech and insight, if you will, wise speech and the wisdom that comes from seeing clearly. Deepening practice yields skillful speech. Skillful speech deepens practice. So sometimes, and we can kind of see the two sides of this, sometimes we notice that wiser, more skillful speech arises as a, I suggested the other day, as a beneficial side effect of deepening practice. We just become aware that, oh, yeah, skillful speech is a little bit easier maybe, comes a little easier sometimes, not all the time. And sometimes we notice that like overt focus on our speech, paying attention to the conditions, thinking about mode and content, noticing the context, taking the context into account. Sometimes we notice that this is supportive of seeing clearly and of deepening wisdom. So recognizing that there's this this relationship between our attention to skillful speech and maybe the bigger context of our practice, the seeing clearly of it, reflects that speech provides this great opportunity when we approach it as we see it treated in the text, right? And as we've considered it in the class, that is, as an integral part of our practice rather than an add-on or a supplement or an ornament, something that would be nice to cultivate when we get around to it, but really recognizing that in the speech practice, we see all of our practice and everything that's available in the practice we can engage with as we engage with our speech, skillful and unskillful. Ying, should we open it back up to questions?
Yeah, thank you, David, for summarizing so much. As we were saying, the speech is hard. It is hard for me. This is my English is my second language, and so it's, you know, even language has a hardness to it for me to express what I really wanted to express. So maybe we'll open up, and we had some hands raising and we didn't get to you. So Jerry, please.
And Heidi had her hand up as well.
Yes.
Thank you. There's so much I want to say. I don't know what it is though, but I mean, my heart seems full. I came into this thinking, maybe, well, I hope we're going to look at the intentions of why we speak. But we sort of got to that in a roundabout way. And then Thursday, I had sort of come up with it, maybe before you brought it up, but speaking from the heart. And today, to me, the theme is listening from the heart. So it makes me think, because I make very limited progress on speech. There's a resistance. There's a clinging to what doesn't work because that's who I am and that's the way my family raised me. And speech is competition and it's not communication. And so I see it, which means it's a good sign, but I'm moved probably because I can relate to what I think David was saying. And at least if you listen from the heart, it's hard not to have the heart respond to his frustration, his hurt, his annoyance, his anger. And boy, I wish I was, you know, if I was brilliant enough to offer some wise counsel, then I probably would be in the teacher spot or even beyond that, because those are pretty frustrating situations. So one of the things that hasn't been stated, but it's implied, is how defilements get into our speech pattern, listening and talking. And at least I try for myself, towards myself, I'm not very good, is realizing some, instead of getting mad at myself, is can you get mad at a blind person for walking into walls? Can you get mad at a deaf person for not hearing you? And I offer that, I can't do it, but I offer that to David as, it's a frustrating world. We are capable as humans of destroying ourselves. Why? Greed, in this case, hatred or fear, and then delusion. The delusion that it won't happen, the delusion that it won't happen to me, the delusion that the rest of you are just fear mongers, you know, I mean, it goes on and on. So the question that David brings up really is about the human condition, that we are capable of self-destruction. And what do we do about that? And somehow we need to figure out a way to find the commonality of our existence together. We need to pull together and with the disparity. But I mean, that isn't saying anything anybody hasn't already thought about. Thank you for letting me share that.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. In the spirit of what you said, maybe I would just take a moment as a group together. Maybe just sit a moment. We know that the topic we brought into our breakout room was there was no single answer. You know, we wish there was somehow there's unifying thing and magically that all of us would agree and be happy ever after. This isn't how human lives are. And can we right here, knowing that even in this room, with all the cultivations that we intended to do, the wholesomeness that we intended to cultivate, that we're holding lots of the different views, ideas, and lots of the conditions that made us who we are right now and how we might feel right now. And can we allow that to be in this room without judging, you know, so-and-so is wrong and so-and-so must be this way? But no, this is how each of us are right now. We honor and respect that. And each of us are valuable human beings in our own ways. So I appreciate Jerry for pointing that out, that we look into our own inner dynamics and making this an opportunity for each of us to grow and mature in some way. So Heidi.
Yeah, I want to say that this group needs to meet more often. We did it in the spring, I think I joined, and I need it more often. I shared on Thursday that I'm in a very unskillfully, I've shown up in a conversation and very unskillfully for the last 20 years. And through this class or today, I remember about all the opportunities that I've had to show up skillfully, but I've brought up, you know, the wrong question or whatever, or didn't really listen. And the topic that we had, I thought it reminded me of how not holding on to things too strongly and just kind of loosely is important. And a few years ago, I've had really amazing opportunities to ask important questions to really important people. And I've never asked the right questions. And well, I think so that. And then I just had this realization. I had the opportunity to sit with the close monks of the Dalai Lama, and I brought up, I was like, I'm really stressed, like I'm invited to potlucks and I don't have enough money to bring food. What do I do, right? And, you know, people eat meat and stuff like that. They said, well, do you feel distressed by this? And I was like, yes. They said, well, show up and eat and bring what you can. And I thought that's reminded me of that again, the Thich Nhat Hanh monks just recently about the climate change. They said people talk. They fill their suitcases. They rush to the other place. They buy a latte. They talk. They fill their suitcases with more paperwork and they go to the other place and then they go back home. So I thought that was...
Thank you for sharing that. You can go to the potluck without food, but with plenty of joy and eat. And that really counts. Yeah. So I know from my culture growing up, food is very meaningful and healing. And oftentimes when there are conflicts, we don't talk about them. We eat together. So when you have a good meal together, there's a lot of softening in our heart and in our being. So Vasiliki, sorry, I probably won't be able to pronounce your name right. You have to correct me.
Vasiliki, yeah. I want to say that this week I had the chance to practice with my best friend who is listening and speech, which is the best person for that because he speaks a lot, not stopping. So the conversation was 2 hours. She was talking only about her. And I was very focused there to listen and answer. To be honest, I didn't feel the need to say anything about me. It was all right that she never asked about me. I was trying to take breath and all the stuff that we had have said. But the thing is that because she was talking a lot without even breathe, I felt that I have to keep a notebook because I was forgetting 3 minutes ago what she said. So for me, it was like, should I keep a note? What? I was really focused to remember. Well, it went very good, very good. But I didn't know, like, what should I interrupt? Like, say now what I have to say or wait? Because it's not going to stop. I didn't interrupt here at all. I think it went very good. But I was not sure if it's a good idea to try to remember 3 minutes ago what she said.
I can hardly remember what's been said 2 minutes ago, let alone 2 hours. You know, sometimes people just, I don't know the situation you're in, but sometimes people just need to be heard. It doesn't doesn't matter what they are saying. Some people, there are certain energy that needs to flow out of them, and they just need a witness and a loving presence around to be heard. I offer support group meetings for people to show up. So much of it was just there offering presence and listen, because people are sharing things that no other people would be listening. There's no place to say what they had to say. And even there is nothing in response, they are heard. And even if we don't remember anything that's being said, they are heard. And that's what needs to happen. And I don't know if this is the situation you're in. And it could be that, you know, maybe taking notes and part of this is to tune in to ourselves internally and externally. And over time, may be able to discern, you know, maybe this just needs to be heard. Or if there is a point where you might want to kind of asking if there is a need to stop or not. So we don't always know, but this is a growing cultivation, I think. It's great that you made it a practice opportunity to really tune in, to observe. I wish there is a black and white answer here. Probably not.
I think it was nice practice, 2 hours, just listening.
Thank you for sharing that.
So we're coming to a close, coming to the top of the hour. We have a couple of things we'd like to just do as we close, by way of closing. One is to let you know that we'll be sending links out to Sutta today and any other materials. We sometimes are asked by people how to support the class if people would want to practice dana. And you can find your way to the Sati Center link. I want to say, though, that this is a potluck. You've brought everything you need to bring for us. But if you feel moved to generosity to support the Sati Center, support these classes, other classes, the donate link on the Sati Center will provide a way to practice that generosity. We certainly appreciate all that generosity that keeps all this happening. We would ask that in the link, if you, when you go through, you can, there's a place where you can put in wise speech, and that'll help keep keep things straight for the people on the other side of the people receiving generosity. We want to tell you, somebody said we should meet more frequently. Yeah, well, we've got another class coming up. This is a special thing. We haven't done it before. It's a 5-part class, 2 consecutive weeks, Tuesday, Thursday, and then a half day retreat where we'll focus on mindfulness of the body and the one of the principal suttas where that practice is found, Majjhima Nikaya 119. So anyway, we hope to see some of you there. We expect that will be really, really interesting and kind of an intense thing. It'll probably attract a smaller dedicated following because of its length. And then finally, a minute after finishing, we'd like to offer the merit of our practice. And this is particularly sweet to do this for this class because we have an opportunity here to take our practice and share it in the world in a very direct way, not only with the holidays coming up, but because, as we've tried to say in this class, that bringing our mindful attention to speech is a way that we bring the open mind, the open heart that grows with our practice to others in the world. This is a way where we hardly have to say, don't hold this tight to yourself, this benefit, this beneficial side benefit of our practice, right? But share it with the next people you come into contact, warts and all. Open up to the extent we can. Opening up the heart and mind is a way that we bring the merit directly into the world. Somebody said earlier just that the ripples from every conversation we have proceed outward, just as a pebble creates ripples in a pond. And that's a useful thing to keep in mind as we do this, to keep spreading the benefit of our practice through speech and other means out into the world to the benefit eventually of all beings. So may all beings know open hearts, open minds, clarity of vision. May all beings be safe, secure. May all beings know contentment and know happiness. May all beings be free. And thank you. Given the nature of this class is particularly with great joy that I encourage people to unmute and say farewell till we meet again, till our paths cross again. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Thank you. Bye, everyone.
See you next time. Bye.
Happy holidays.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
And Boris's daughter. Hi. Oh, hi there.
Hi, Boris and daughter.
I'm assuming that was his daughter. I don't actually know.
Nice.
Bye, all.
I need a waiting room. There we go. Okay. Oh,
stop recording.